Thursday, October 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, more suspected bombs sent to prominent Democrats are seized. Saudi Arabia says the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi was premeditated. And singer Shawn Mendes' career continues to flourish. It's all ahead. As authorities retrieve more bombs sent to prominent Democrats, President Donald Trump is largely blaming the media for an angry political atmosphere in America. In his Twitter feed Thursday, the president suggested the media was a big part of the anger in the United States today. He said it was hateful beyond description and called on the mainstream media to clean up its act fast. VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman tells me about Trump's latest tweet concerning the media.
The president had mentioned the news media in his rally last evening in Wisconsin, where he called for unity and people to watch their language. But today he's back to the Donald Trump that's very familiar on Twitter and lashing out at the media, referring to it again as fake news and saying it's gotten so bad and hateful that it is beyond description, and calling for the mainstream media to clean up its act fast. And, of course, as you might imagine, some of the mainstream media, some of the reporters, basically tossing this back towards the president, saying they're reporting objectively on the things that he's doing and saying. And if there's anybody who's most responsible for this angry political atmosphere we have in the country right now, it is the president of the United States.
He seems to have particularly clashed with CNN, also he also often mentions the New York Times, but CNN, the New York Bureau of CNN, was one of those places targeted with these devices yesterday.
Right. I would note, however, that recently when he has sparred directly with correspondents from CNN and the New York Times, he has both criticized them and then praised some of their reporting. So it depends on a day-to-day basis of where he's at on that. And I should mention that he continues to take questions from both CNN and the New York Times regularly, even giving the New York Times correspondents here at the White House a recent interview in the Oval Office.
Actually, I have heard that one editor was saying that he actually speaks to the press more than former President Barack Obama did.
Oh, he's extremely available, not in the way that we had seen in previous administrations where you would have these formal news conferences, but he takes questions during the so-called pool sprays, when a group of photographers, videographers, and journalists, including broadcasters, come in a small group to usually watch the president sign something. President Obama did not speak during those. Going out to the South Lawn to board Marine One, again, President Obama and other presidents would rarely stop to answer questions, but more often than not, President Trump stops. And I've also thrown questions at him, besides in the Oval Office, also on airport tarmacs when he'll come over and speak to a small group of us. So in that way, he is extremely available and responsive to the White House press.
Well, meanwhile, there's continuing investigation into this almost across the nation, the discovery of these various devices all along the East Coast and as well as Congresswoman Maxine Waters' office out in California.
Right. I think at this hour we're up to 10 separate suspected devices that have been found, sent to Hillary Clinton, who, of course, ran against President Trump, former President Barack Obama, who was Trump's predecessor. And according to the FBI, now two devices or suspected devices in packages that were sent to former Vice President Joe Biden.
VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman. Here's some of the top news stories that are trending. The Pentagon is considering sending military troops to the southern border with Mexico. Russian President Vladimir Putin says Russia will create weapons without comparison anywhere. The European Union turns its attention to Morocco in a bid to slow the African migrant flow. And the Ethiopian Parliament elects its first female president. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A UK-based team of astronomers say they have found evidence that points to a large number of upcoming supermassive black hole mergers. After studying maps detailing the sources of powerful jets, which are indications of supermassive black holes, the scientists say they found signs of black holes closely orbiting each other. Before they merge, a pair of black holes draw close and then orbit each other, forming what is known as a binary black hole. Black holes basically come in two sizes. First, there's the stellar black hole, which can have a mass anywhere from 5 to 10 solar masses. Then there's the supermassive black hole, with a mass equal to millions or even billions of suns. They can be found in the center of gigantic galaxies like our own Milky Way. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, U.S. stocks rebound following Wednesday's decline. Saudi Arabia has again changed its explanation for the killing of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi inside Riyadh's Istanbul consulate, now saying it was premeditated based on information it had received from Turkey. The statement Thursday, carried by the Saudi press agency, was issued by the Saudi public prosecutor. What was left unclear was who premeditated the killing. The Saudis fired five officials linked to the killing and have arrested 18 suspects. International critics, including President Donald Trump, have said that the country's de facto ruler, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, bears ultimate responsibility for the killing. Jack Rice is a former Central Intelligence Agency officer, a former prosecutor, and a defense attorney. He tells me how he views the Saudi government's shifting explanation of Khashoggi's killing.
Yeah, it's fascinating when you realize that you have the leadership saying that this was murder. Because when you say you're saying is this was murder, because that's in fact what it was. What appears to be the case now is that they're trying to separate out the murder from the king and the crown prince. If it can drop below that level, then they can deal with the issue. They're trying to keep it from rising above that level. That's where we are today.
But the problem seems to be with that is the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, he's known as the de facto leader of Saudi Arabia. It seems that it would be very unlikely something like this would have happened without his consent and or knowledge.
Oh, I think you're absolutely correct. I mean, that is the issue right now. We have seen that the Crown Prince, who really is the de facto leader, I mean, he's the new generation in Saudi Arabia, and we expect that he is going to take the reins of leadership and already has. And what we're seeing right now is already this separation from Western powers, the Europeans, the Americans, of really having this very close-knit relationship with the Crown Prince. And their problem is trying desperately to separate that out. I don't think they're going to be able to do that, because what we're seeing right now is mounting evidence of, frankly, a cover-up and finally an acknowledgement. But that doesn't fix your problem.
Yes, because a number of people, including Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, have called on the Saudis saying, where is Khashoggi's body?
Yeah, everybody is wondering that question now, too. I mean, if we look at what's going on right now, it puts the Americans in an interesting place, because the Americans have had a lot of problems recently with the Turks themselves and with President Erdogan. And so right now, is he the good guy, quote-unquote? Are the Saudis the good guys, the bad guys? And, of course, we've seen that President Trump, from the beginning, was trying to call this a rogue operation. And those are his words, which is really quite astounding, rather than saying, let's see where this goes. And to simply give them a pass is really a shocking issue. But it really says a lot about the relationship that the Americans and the Saudis have had, frankly, for decades now.
Well, meanwhile, CIA Director Gina Haspel has traveled to Turkey, and there are reports, according to pro-government media in Turkey and as well as the Washington Post, that she has listened to an audio recording of Khashoggi's torture and killing, and apparently she will be briefing Trump about this later today. The fact that such a tape exists, I mean, there have been rumors that it was there or whatever, but again, that's sort of more evidence.
It absolutely is. I think about this as a former prosecutor. If I had a tape like this, the impact that this has on the decision makers is massive. Because if you can separate out an act, a horrible act, from those decision makers, they can look at it more coldly. But if you actually have the tape of somebody screaming as you're cutting somebody to pieces, the problem is it becomes visceral. And when you have something that's visceral, especially with a president who's this visceral, he's going to have a very, very difficult time, I think, separating himself out personally from actually what happened to this journalist.
No matter who decided on this murder, on this killing of Khashoggi, it seems that this person or persons did not realize the amount of uproar, that international uproar, that this would have caused.
Yeah, it does seem clear that the Saudis ran this operation flat-footed. I think one of the other problems the Saudis didn't realize was just the amount of Turkish surveillance in this case. I don't think they realized just how much the Turks were watching, just how much the Turks were listening. And this is really a side story, but with a grander view of exactly what goes on, not just in Turkey, but everywhere in the world when it comes to embassies following and watching each other and watching operations being done.
Yeah, the fact that this took place, although it took place in the Saudi consulate, but in another country.
Right. Without question. I mean, it really does say something about how this is done. It also is saying a lot about the Turks themselves, and specifically what has happened in with the presidency of Erdogan in the last year to 2 years. He has upped his level of surveillance. He has upped his security forces. They have conducted mass arrests, including journalists themselves. So it's not as if their hands are particularly clean themselves, but it does highlight, with that amount of surveillance increasing as it has, it gives them that much more at their disposal to argue the points that they're arguing today.
Former CIA officer and former prosecutor Jack Rice. Tens of thousands of NATO alliance troops are springing to action Thursday at the start of the alliance's Trident Juncture exercise, its largest exercise since the end of the Cold War. NATO's command, senior enlisted leader for Allied Command Operations, Command Sergeant Major Davor Petic, spoke exclusively with VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb to discuss the purpose of the massive event and Russia's involvement.
What kind of message is NATO and the United States trying to send?
Very simple message. We are ready and we're capable to meet any possible security threat coming to the NATO borders. That's the only reason why we do it. This is going to be one of the biggest exercises in NATO history, especially after the Cold War. Over 40,000 troops will be participating in this exercise, and it's to test our readiness and our responsiveness to potential crisis. About 70 to 80% of troops on the ground will be enlisted, NCO soldiers, Sailor, Airmen, Marines. And our job is to make sure that we keep those force readiness levels up. We are capable at all time to be responsive, deployable, and reactive enough to meet the challenge at the right time, at the right pace. The main goal is to make sure once we actually deploy, we can fight, sustain, and basically win together without going through any major problems when it comes to practical execution of that mission. We also have Russian observers being at the exercise, and this is all in line with our openness. Basically, it's all open to observers to come in and to see that this is in no way, shape, or form aggressive towards anybody around us, but it's just showing us our readiness to deal with any kind of threat that might be posed to our allies.
You mentioned Russia. This is a message to Russia. Yes?
This is a message to everybody. To everybody who believes that NATO is not ready to provide security for its allies. You know, nobody's willing to mess with an alliance that has so much potential, so much capability within the alliance itself. And alliance that's been there for a long, long time, over 70 years, but I say was never probably as active and as determined as it is right now at this point in time. So it's not a message to Russia, it's a message to everybody who thinks that NATO is not ready.
But it's everybody, including Russia.
Of course, Russia is included.
NATO's command senior enlisted leader for Allied Command Operations, Command Sergeant Major Davor Pettik. He spoke with VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. Well, stocks seemed to rebound on Thursday as investors appeared hopeful that a slate of major earnings reports would boost Wall Street following the previous session's collapse. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 373 points, or 1.52%. to 24,956, the S&P 500 gained 1.7%, and the NASDAQ rose 2.6%, with tech and communication services stocks leading the charge. U.S. stocks plunged Wednesday in yet another sign of a major correction this month that wiped out all the gains of 2018. Stocks have reeled under concerns over rising interest rates by the U.S. Central Bank, higher bond yields, trade tensions, and politics. U.S. voters cast ballots in congressional elections in 2 weeks. Wednesday, it was announced that new single-family home sales in the U.S. fell to a two-year low in September, a sign of rising borrowing costs. Peter Morrissey is a University of Maryland economist. He told International Edition's Victor Beatty the market has grown more pessimistic as the impact of tax reform earlier this year has diminished.
This quarter, profits are up great. And the quarterly reports would indicate stocks should continue to rise. But there's concern that after this quarter, profits will only grow at single-digit rates, which is perfectly reasonable. The Fed hasn't managed expectations very effectively about interest rates. And Donald Trump's comments about the Fed, while probably correct, are not helpful. There's a general sense that amateurs are in charge at the Fed.
Do you anticipate that interest rates will continue an incremental increase, as the Fed chairman seems to indicate?
He's given us no reason to indicate otherwise. My feeling is the economy will grow through this. We'll continue to have growth around 3%. We're going to get quarterly numbers very soon, and the consensus estimate is 3.3. My feeling is it's going to come in about there, and that should help lift the markets at that point. The real problem is there's concern that the Fed doesn't have a real good sense of how far it needs to go and overshoot, that it's going to raise interest rates too much. The problem isn't that the Fed is raising interest rates now. The problem is that it's going to go too far.
What role does tariffs play in this sell-off?
People are concerned about them, but in reality, they haven't had much impact on the U.S. economy. They haven't caused any inflation. The impacts on domestic production are very limited. It has depressed farm prices a bit, but in reality, that doesn't have much to do with the stock market. There's really a lot of superstition out there when it comes to tariffs. This is not an import-dependent economy.
The corporate earnings reports coming in so far have not been all bad. Microsoft said its profit in the quarter soared on the back of revenue from services hosted in the Internet cloud. Boeing's profits also surged after a tax settlement, raising its earnings estimate. So what about the fundamentals of the economy itself?
Well, the fundamentals of the stock market are very strong. The average S&P price-earnings ratio for the last 25 years is 25, and the market is trading considerably below that. So you can't say that the market's overpriced. It wasn't above that when this decline began. And with the economy continuing to grow, I mean, profits are not going to grow at 20% the way they did this quarter, simply because 10% of that was the tax cut. But they're still going to grow at 8, 9, 10% next quarter. So my feeling is that the fundamentals are very, very good. Caterpillar has really taken a beating and had a very good quarterly report. They have had some resource price increases. However, they've been able to raise their prices very nicely. The market's concerned, for example, that growth is slowing globally. Well, Caterpillar is the quintessential global company, and it's been able to pass along higher prices to its customers in emerging markets. That tells you that those emerging markets are solid. But a lot of American companies are going through adjustments. I mean, the U.S. economy is going through an adjustment in terms of the emphasis on what it makes. That's why some companies are doing really well and some companies lag. But there's nothing abnormal about that.
Peter Morrissey foresees a short period of volatility, perhaps 2 weeks more, before he believes the market will resume its upward climb. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This is International Edition. A young singer is enjoying a lot of career success. VOA's Border Crossing host Larry London joins me with the latest.
Today it's a Canadian singer who has been putting out hits since he came on the scene a few years ago. He's got his third album, which came out this past year in May. It's called Shawn Mendes, because his name is Shawn Mendes. It's his third CD, and today we're going to check out his brand new single from the album, the follow-up to the hit song In My Blood. Let's check out a song from Shawn Mendes called Lost in Japan.
All they take is one flight. We'd be in the same time zone. Looking through your timeline, seeing all the rainbows. I got an idea, and I know that it sounds crazy. I just wanna see you. Oh, I gotta ask, do you got plans tonight? I'm a couple hundred miles from Japan, and I was thinking I could fly to your hotel tonight. Cause I can't get you off my mind. Can't get you off my mind. Can't get you off my mind.
Well, Shawn Mendes seems to be just one of a number of very popular Canadian artists in the music industry now.
Seems to be a lot. Drake, Justin Bieber, the list goes on and on. Shawn is a little bit different in that he is a good guy, and that's what his reputation has been so far. He was asked about that. How long can you remain a good guy and stay out of trouble? He said, well, as long as possible. But he said, I'm not making any promises. But, you know, he continues to have a large legion of fans around the world. He honored one of his idols recently, Freddie Mercury, from the band Queen, because there's a new film about Queen called Bohemian Rhapsody. And Shawn released one of their songs called Under Pressure as a tribute to his idol. Shawn is also considering a film role himself as Elvis Presley, because if you look at Shawn Mendes, he kind of embodies Elvis in many ways. He's even got Elvis's hairstyle. He's got the same hairstyle.
But he's not from Memphis.
He's from Canada. He's from the Ontario side of Memphis. And Shawn was performing this week in the Hollywood Bowl in California. He was a part of the We Can Survive concert to celebrate and honor breast cancer survivors. A lot of big-name pop stars were there participating. Recently, Shawn filmed a video for Country Music Television with Zac Brown Band. They sang the song Keep Me in Mind. Shawn, while he performed the song, had a visible scar on his cheek. The scar, which has been in the news a lot lately, was the result of a scooter accident. He was riding a scooter. He said he tried to do a stunt that a friend taught him. He said it was a bad move. It was a foolish decision. And he said now he'll have a lifelong reminder of his poor decision-making. Huh. But he's still going to continue scootering. He also sang the song that we heard today, Lost in Japan, on the American Music Awards, where Shawn won the Favorite Adult Contemporary Artist Award. Time Magazine has named him to their 2018 annual 100 Most Influential People in the World issue. And for the second straight year, Billboard put him in their 21 Under 21 list. He's only 20. So congratulations to Shawn Mendes and all that success. The new song, by the way, Lost in Japan, features one of the hottest producers in music. His name is Zedd. And in an interview recently, Zedd said on this song that he and Shawn had a chance to do something that they've never done before.
That is Larry London, and that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.